Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Walker Wildman with me, co-hosting, with Steve Jordahl. Steve's from OneNewsNow.com.
Good morning, Walker. Hey. It's good to be on the air with you again.
Good to be back.
Dr. Ray Pritchard's also co-hosting with us from Kansas City. Ray is home for the holidays, are you, Ray?
That's my last big trip is done. And yeah. After a year of being mostly on the road, I'm glad to be home.
Amen. So much more to talk about this half hour. Of course, the late President George H.W. Bush, who passed away 3 days ago, I think it was, 3 or 4 days ago. His body is in our nation's capital, in the rotunda of the Capitol, of the Capitol building itself now. Steve, do they refer to this as lying state?
They do. They refer to it as lying in state, and it is, the coffin is lying on the
It's basically a wooden box.
A wooden box, but the same one that held President Lincoln's body.
Yep.
In 1864.
Wow.
Cattle calf, I think, is what it's called. But I could be wrong about the pronunciation of that.
We're going with your pronunciation.
There you go.
We don't know.
And then there's a national memorial service tomorrow at the National Cathedral.
Yep.
Here in Washington.
And the news there is that President Trump has been invited. He will not give remarks, but he has been invited. He will attend. That was an issue, as you recall, with Senator McCain's funeral when he died recently. The McCain family chose not to invite the president.
Or Sarah Palin, evidently.
Right. To any of the events because of the bad blood between the two families. But the Bush family's class saying, no, we don't want to make this about, and I know you already played the Joy Behar thing last hour about that, but they don't want to make it about Trump, and leaving him off would make it about Trump. So they're going to invite him. So
President Trump and the First Lady will be at the memorial service with, I assume, all the living former presidents.
Which right now.
Will Jimmy Carter be there?
He should be. I haven't heard that he's not.
He's getting on up there. Yep. I don't know.
Yeah, so you have Jimmy Carter, you have, Carter, you have President Bill Clinton.
And W.
You have W. Bush.
And Obama.
And you have President Obama.
Yep. So you'll have
four.
Four presidents.
And then the current president, so that'll be five.
Five presidents. That's unusual that you have
five living presidents.
Yeah.
I remember growing up, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and President Truman stayed around an awful long time after his
After he got out of office.
I remember
after he got out of the kitchen.
Because I remember seeing a whole lot of stuff of former presidents, and Truman was just there forever. Do you remember that, Ray?
Yes. And when did he die? In the what? 60s? 70s?
I can tell you.
Wasn't Truman from Missouri?
He was.
Right, Harry Truman. Yeah. Kansas City.
Now, Dwight Eisenhower was from Kansas.
72, he died in 1972. And by the way,
who did?
Harry Truman. It's Harry S. Truman. And do you know what the S stands for?
Nothing.
No.
It stands for nothing. It's just S.
No, really?
Yes. S without a period, by the way. And Wikipedia has it wrong. Just saying.
Okay.
But now, Eisenhower and Truman were back-to-back, right?
Truman and then Eisenhower.
Right.
Truman and then Eisenhower. Truman was a Democrat.
Truman succeeded Roosevelt when he was Roosevelt's vice president. Roosevelt died in office, he succeeded him.
And then after Truman, a Democrat, came Eisenhauer.
Eisenhower, who really transcended party because he was the war hero.
Okay, but he ran as a Republican.
He ran as a Republican.
But I'm just saying, it's interesting to me, you've got Heartland presidents back-to-back. You've got Missouri, Truman from Missouri.
Yep.
And
Eisenhower, Kansas.
Do you know where Eisenhower's from in Kansas, Ray?
Oh, I'm looking it up right now.
Both the Bushes are from Texas, and you had Clinton from Arkansas and President Obama from Illinois. So it'd be interesting to know when the last president from New York was. compared to Donald Trump.
Rutherford B. Hayes. I don't know if that's the case. I know he's, well, maybe
President Trump.
from New York. He's the only one outside of the heartland is what we're getting at here.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, well, he's from, President Eisenhower is from Abilene, Kansas.
Yes.
Which is not a big, it's a small town. It's between Topeka and Salina, it's just a little tiny town. That's where he's from. I mean, Kansas boy.
Yep. So then Kennedy from Massachusetts, Johnson from Texas, Nixon from California, Ford from Michigan, Carter from
Georgia.
Georgia.
Well, the interesting thing to me is, it's one of those with Eisenhower from a tiny town in the middle of Kansas, he grows up to be maybe the greatest general in the history of the country. I mean, certainly in the top five.
It's interesting to read his biography.
Eisenhower?
Yes. He of course, was a general during World War II, but he made his way up through World War I and even before World War I. He was in the military for a long time. I'm trying to remember if it was the Spanish-American. What was the, like, in before right before World War I was, like, was it the Spanish-American War?
Right. In but 1898, something like that.
Somewhere around there he was. And he was also one that either surveyed or made possible, as from the military point of view, the highway system. They were
interstate system.
That
changed our country, right?
It did. Right. And the reason that he did it was because he remembered traveling cross country as a member of the military, and it taking forever, and the roads being not just terrible. So I think that was kind of what made him.
Yeah, whoever came up with the interstate system idea was a genius.
Yeah.
And ahead of their time.
That started under Eisenhower, right?
I believe so.
And that's a great gift to the country.
Oh, wow. You travel the world. Now, some places they do have, in Europe they have what amounts to an interstate system. But
the Autobahn.
A lot of places in the world, it's two-lane, winding roads, and they haven't the money or the ingenuity to do what we have done here with our interstate system that allowing us to transport goods and items and services quickly. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Walker and Ray and Steve. If you want to watch the show, go to Facebook or YouTube and just type in Today's Issues. And on our Facebook page, we share the stories that we're talking about, the original sources. And you can also interact with our other listeners there. Check it out on our Facebook or YouTube. Steven, next story.
Well, we have an incoming in the next Congress that starts January 2nd, I believe, in Washington. We have two new members that are Muslim women. And one of them, Rashida Tlaib, is already, upsetting the apple cart. The American-Israeli PAC, Public Affairs Committee, always takes the freshman congressmen, both parties, to Israel to educate them about the issues going on in the Middle East with such an important foreign policy point. So these freshman congressmen will go, Democrats and Republicans together, they'll go on a fact-finding mission as a, as a freshman. They'll show them the lay of the land, and they'll give them the briefing on what our important ally Israel needs. Well, Rashida Tlaib, the Democrat representative who is from the Detroit area, has been elected. She is a congresswoman-elect, has elected not to go on this fact-finding mission. She instead is going to lead her own fact-finding mission to the West Bank, the Palestinian West Bank. So already we're seeing a possibility. This is the first time really that someone in Congress, even the Muslim congressman, who was the guy that head of the DNC?
Perez?
No.
Or
Ellison.
Ellison. Keith Ellison. Even Keith Ellison didn't take this offensive or strong of a stand. So it's the first time our government is split on this issue, although granted, I don't know how many people are going to go with her, but there's an awful lot of groundswell from colleges and everything with this boycott divest movement. You think it's a big deal, Ray?
I think it's a big deal from a symbolic point of view. is the first time this has happened. Our government has been Israel's best friend in the world, right? And so now this woman, Rashida Tlaib, she's made clear, hasn't she? She's no friend of Israel. She's going to go to the West Bank, and we're going to see, don't you think, Steve, we're going to see more of this, more actions like this in the days to come?
The farther left the Democrat Party drifts, I think the more we're going to see of this, because it's they're an oppressed people, they say, the Palestinians, and so they intersectionality.
And I think we're going to see more Muslims elected into office in the U.S. in the years to come, Ray and Steve, because we've seen this basically unlimited migration from the Middle East and Europe, where the Muslims are coming in on various immigration programs to places like Detroit and just Michigan in general. You have the same issue in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. We talked to Jan Markell about this sometimes. And so that's how Muslims are able to get elected in these districts, is because there is a lot of Muslims in the district. And so that's, I think, the more Muslims we allow to immigrate to the U.S., for various reasons, the more you're going to have this happen.
Well, this woman was elected from Detroit. So clearly, I mean, a Democratic stronghold in her district anyway, right?
Right.
So I think she figures, and probably correctly, she's got nothing to lose with her constituents. This is not like it was a 51-49 kind of split that she won clearly. And so you only do this kind of thing, Steve, when you know there's very little chance of being politically disruptive among your own base. I think people voted for her, quite happy for her to take the stand.
Either that, and I think that's probably it, Tim, that's probably what it is, but also on the table for something like this is just naivete. We see Ocasio-Cortez doing some things which, as a freshman, she probably would be better off not doing, like protesting in Nancy Pelosi's office. So now maybe Ms. Tlaib just doesn't know what she's bitten off from naivete. It could be that as well.
Yeah, we'll see. Next up.
I'm concerned with the state of our Christian universities these days. We have two members of the Board of Trustees from Azusa Pacific College in Southern California who have resigned from their position on the board because they say the institution has drifted from its foundation and mission and is now at odds with its written policies, statement of faith, and the Bible itself. Azusa Pacific was a strong Christian college when I was going to a different Christian college in Southern California, and it hurts my heart to see this, but Raleigh Williams and Dave Diaz have resigned from the board. Ray, are you concerned about the state of Christian education, college education?
In a huge way. And so much of it right now, Steve, is not over what we would call theology. I mean, theology underlies everything, but this is not an argument about the second coming church government or which denomination do you prefer. This is the question of what is marriage. What does it mean to be a man or woman? This is the ethical question of how are these big universities like Biola, like Azusa Pacific, Westmont, which is up the road in Santa Barbara, and Wheaton College there in the middle of the country, how are these Christian universities going to handle the question of gay rights, LGBT, and they're all, every single one of them, Steve, they're all under pressure either to tone down their statements about what the Bible says or in some cases to change. And I think Azusa Pacific, there was a dust up there a month or two ago, which I think is connected to this, about they were going to allow, quote, romantic same-sex relationships on campus while trying to maintain, quote, the biblical position of one man, one woman, and so on for marriage. That's really untenable. Once you start down that road of compromise, it's hard to turn back.
Mm-hmm. Got same kind of struggle going on at Wheaton College, I think.
Wheaton has been. They had that professor who made the statement that that Christians and Muslims worship the same God and started wearing hijab. I remember that. And then they did. Was it Wheaton, Ray, that did their took a stand about homosexuality, that they could. You could be in a homosexual relationship as long as it was not platonic.
I think that's Azusa Pacific. However, however they said that. But every single, look, we ought to be praying. And because rather than just throwing a lot of criticism, there are good people in these schools, but they are under enormous pressure. And sometimes, Steve, it's from alumni who do not believe what the school has traditionally believed. And sometimes it's big givers. And every single Christian school that's out there, that's well known, is under pressure either to change their views on sexuality or hold your views, but don't say it out loud.
And the political correctness, you guys didn't talk about Ryan Bamberger last hour, did you? Let's deal with this. Ryan Bamberger, who's from the Radiance Foundation, was asked to give a pro-life speech at Wheaton. This is a black man who was asked to give a pro-life speech at a Christian college. You know what you would wonder seriously what could go wrong. But believe me, it went wrong. The students said they felt threatened and unsafe because of the rhetoric and what he was talking about, the abortion and the black community. This is his response to what Wheaton is doing. Cut to.
Wheaton College administration has actually played a role in the student government that denounced me just days after this presentation, which was entitled Black Lives Matter In and Out of the Womb. And what this all boils down to is that because I am black, I'm biracial, white and black, and I didn't toe the liberal racial line, they attacked me. So I was presenting a talk on racism in the abortion industry and talking about racism as well in general, and a Christian perspective on all these things, particularly the Black Lives Matter movement. And so I was denounced by the student government that worked with their Office of Student Development, so some of the administration staff worked crafting this letter. So five people were involved in this letter. Only one person actually attended the presentation. And so it just continued from there. The administration remained silent as these attacks that retold what actually happened.
So that Ryan Bamberger in a conversation with our Chris Woodward, who diligently reached out to him.
Yeah. What a mess.
Yeah. Well, we've seen what's happened across the country when it comes to higher education, and how these secular progressives have taken over the campuses. And by that I mean not only faculty, administration, clubs. Walker, I'll just give you an example how extreme this gets, has gotten. You went to a state university, or you went to Mississippi State University, right?
Right.
But this is not unusual for other schools, including private, even Christian schools. But there was one time you came home and you told me that there was stickers up on some buildings.
Yeah. There was the equality is what they frame it as, but it was the no discrimination here type stickers. The LGBTQ, whatever other letters, equality stickers, but they labeled them safe zones. So certain offices would have these stickers that said LGBTQ safe zone, but that's insinuating that there are other places on campus that aren't safe,
right?
For all students.
That's what I
And so it was a bizarre thing.
But were there places where homosexuals were attacked when they were walking to class?
No, we all know that doesn't happen in mass at campuses.
Well, there were safe zones, and there must have been places that weren't, as you
combat,
said.
Gay combat zones.
Here's what it is. It's a litmus test. If you put the sticker on your window, the LGBTQ equality stickers on your business window or on your office window, then you're given a thumbs-up approval of sexually deviant behavior. But if you don't, then somehow you might be a bigot. And so what happened at Mississippi State University, and this is still the case.
A few years ago when you were there.
Yeah, but the stickers are still there. They've been there for years. That is, the local group, the student group or faculty group that is in charge of the diversity is what they frame it as.
Yeah.
They had to seek approval from the university to put these stickers on their windows, because you can't just go around everybody putting their own their own sticker on employee windows, because then it would be chaos. So the university approved of this, and so faculty members and other classrooms, they all had these stickers, many of them. Safe spaces.
It's called virtue signaling.
Right.
So, well, I remember when you came home and told me that, and I thought, I thought just what we said here. Did they say safe zones?
Yes.
Okay, so.
But the interesting thing, and I wanted to try this, but I never did. So I would encourage, if you're listening and you're from Mississippi State and you're a student, try this. You need to get together with the BSU, the Baptist right. Student Union, and even the Methodist group if you want to, and you need to develop a group called Religious Freedom Safe Zone, or First Amendment Safe Zone, whatever you want to call it. You need to try to get the university to approve of the stickers
right.
so that employee, faculty,
can feel students safe.
Can feel safe and they can put the stickers on their window.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
that's a great idea. Would they ever approve that?
That would be the interesting test, and we'll see.
But you just described what happened to you, what you saw at Mississippi State University a few years ago. But as I'm telling you, I'm just using that as an example because that's all over the country at the colleges and universities. Ray, and the I remember too seeing a sticker at a restaurant, and I've seen these stickers at other restaurants, and they'll say, we don't discriminate, right?
Right.
And they're just a restaurant. Nobody's ever discriminated at it. Nobody's ever gone in. People don't go in to restaurants, sit down, and have a server come over and say, "Sir, before you order a meat and three, I got to ask you, are you gay?" Because right. if you're gay, no black eyed peas for you. Out the door you go.
Right.
No, that doesn't happen anywhere in the country. Never. And yet, that's what these LGBT activist groups want you to believe is going on. I'll give you an example. You know why? Because Christians don't hate homosexuals. They don't. Right. Christians, genuine Christians, do not hate anybody, and don't express hostility toward anybody. Real hostility. Now this bogus, false hostility, you'll find, the people will claim that they're just.
They equate disapproval with hostility.
That's hate.
Yeah. If you just simply disapprove.
If you disapprove of their lifestyle, that is hatred. That is hateful.
Yeah.
In their minds, and that's what did you say?
They equate it to hate, disapproval.
Yes, yes. But anyway, I remember, there's the Religious Liberty Bill that passed in the state of Mississippi a year and a half ago called HB 1523. You remember when that controversy came up on the heels of HB 2 in North Carolina? Well, remember we had Governor Phil Bryan on about that and others, and that was a religious liberty bill that passed, designed basically to protect Christians from having to participate in ceremonies that violated their conviction, their conscience. We had seen what was happening with Christian businesses across the country. So the state of Mississippi passed this law. Well, the Human Rights Campaign, the gay activist group, they said, "Oh, the sky is falling, man. LGBT people are going to be run out of the state of Mississippi. This is awful." Well, guess what? Here we are a year and a half later, and the LGBT folks can't even find plaintiffs. Is that what you call them?
Right, that's right.
They can't even find somebody to go complain so that they can file a lawsuit against HB 1523. Why? Because the kind of discrimination that they keep talking about, that they want you to believe is happening, does not happen. Or at least does not happen, but very, very rarely does it happen. So, anyway, just wanted to make that point. Have a great day, everybody. Keep listening to AFR, and we'll see you tomorrow.